Good morning. My name is Lindsay. I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the weekend workshop. Here we are. We are here. So a few things. First, I want to thank everybody for being here, of course. And please help yourself to all the tasty treats. Please eat them. I'll be personally offended if you don't. I'm joking. Maybe a little bit. So there's that. Coffee's over there. If you need anything, please let me know. I'll try to help as best as possible. But before we get started, I'm trying to think if there's anything. Amanda, oh, there you are. You're right there. Is there anything that everyone needs to know about the facility?
Sure. Okay. We have a bathroom right there. There's also a bathroom downstairs at the end of the hall. Okay. You can smoke.
You know, you hear, can you hear this? Where to put the cig butts?
It's at the end of the sidewalk, yep. Next to the parking lot. They'll have class in here tomorrow, so they prefer you don't smoke.
Like near the door.
Right near the door.
Go out to the receptacle.
Yeah, go out to the receptacles. Go away. We got this. Okay. Thank you, Amanda. Let's see. Okay, now once we get everything kind of passed out, we can join and do a little meditation, right? And then, Carl, would you like to, after the meditation, do a prayer? Okay, great. All right. Just a little meditation.
All right.
Ready, set, meditate. Thank you.
God, thank you from the bottom of our hearts for bringing us all together today. Being able to enjoy this space with each other. We ask that you set aside everything we think we know so that we can have an open mind and a good experience. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. All right. And real quick, one thing I forgot. I want to thank everybody who came and helped me to set up and get everything together. So thank you again for everybody who came and did that. And thank you ahead of time for everyone who helped me clean. Go ahead and throw that out there. And I'm going to pre-thank people that are bringing more stuff here that they're not here yet. So I'm going to thank them too. All right. And before we get started, Tarek, would you want to introduce Tarek for the start it off? Okay.
I'm Tarek. I'm an addict.
Hey, Tarek. Hey, Tarek.
I've got so much I can say about this man now. I've spent the last 48 hours with him, and we have had a wonderful time. I'm always amazed by individuals that I meet that have been around for almost 30 years and are still immersed in the program, in the three legacies, recovery, community, and service. I think it's incredible. We've got to exchange stories and a level of transparency and not really concerned about what the other person thinks as we swap experience, because we know that there's a language of the heart, which is, I guess, the theme of this weekend. And I think you're in for a treat. He's told me a little bit about his workbook. And I am intrigued by some of the concepts he's been mentioning. And I think all of you will be as well. So with that, I give you Terry.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Terry.
Good morning. I'm Terry, and I'm an addict and alcoholic.
Thank you, Terry.
I'm really glad to be here with y'all. We're going to start off with a little bit of music. I like to, when I do workshops, music, there's something that soothes the soul. I think you'll love the music as the day goes on. Let's start with our first one here. Barry here named it, man. It just went off. And I think it was one or two notes in, and he said the song. So here it is. Learning how to live one day at a time is a trip, right? That's how people have been trying to teach us that really basic, simple thing since the beginning of time. If you know anything about the old philosophers, every one of them talked about, like Plato said, tomorrow's a day that exists only on the calendar of fools. What we got is today, right? So the way that the workshops are going to go is that there's five different books. We're going to do five different workshops, and they're going to be interactive. We're going to do these together. And each of the workbooks are going to cover, it's under the theme of Keys to the Kingdom. In the big book, there's a story written by a woman called The Keys to the Kingdom, right? And it's a fabulously interesting story In fact, stories are how I got sober. I found God through other people's stories. And so the first of the workbooks is the one we're on now. It's called Knowing My Truth. And that's going to be just a reaffirmation of the truth about my life and my addiction. Your life and your addiction. And because everything starts there. In the 12 of 12, it says there's only one step we can take with 100%. And that is step one. Because if I don't keep the drugs and the alcohol out of me, there is no life, there is no wife, there is no... I had a great life today. I live a life that most people are like, wow, man, this guy's got such a great life. But I am totally aware that everything beautiful in my life will all fit perfectly into a crack pipe or a syringe or a shot glass. It all fits. So our first workshop is going to be Knowing My Truth. We got to start there. Then the next one is going to be My Spiritual Condition. And that is to take a look at where you really at. Some of the stuff's uncomfortable that you're going to look at. You're welcome to write and do it now here in the workshop, or just take it home and do whatever you want. I know that they're recording all this stuff, so you'll be able to download it if you want to later. My email is on the front of all the workshops and phone number, along with the disclaimer that I'm no expert or authority. These are just my experiences and my opinions. So if you need an electronic copy of any of the workbooks, you just shoot me an email, and then I will send that to you. And then the third workshop is going to be based on an AA classic called Drop the Rock. And we're going to get visited by Sandy Beach, who made that famous in 76. Then number four is going to be Daily Disciplines. And then the last is going to be based on the four paradoxes of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, Keys to the Kingdom, the opening, each of the workbooks have part of the story that she wrote. It says, AA is not a plan for recovery that can be finished and done with. It is a way of life, and the challenge contained in its principles is great enough to keep any human being striving for as long as they live. And that's the Keys of the Kingdom. If you open the workbook on the page 2, it has the original 6 steps. That's just, I love to look at Bill's handwriting. I don't know why. Sure, I know why. So when they first got sober before the 12 steps, there were 6 steps. And then below that are, this is all Bill's writing of the way Ebby took him through the steps when he first got sober, before the 12 steps existed. So we're going to start with a timeline. Okay, so I don't know how many of you ever done a timeline to look at your life. Now, this works perfectly well. It really works well in correctional facilities. So what happens with the timeline is you don't really necessarily, it's more of a general way of how your life. So we'll start with mine. And I'm going to put right here, 1955. It was Christmas Day. There was a star over a manger, and this kid named Terry was born. So in 1955, I'm born, right? Just like that baby back there, you know, perfect. And my life's cruising along, right? So what a timeline is for is to have you in a very general but really beautiful way look at the truth about what's happened in your life as different things have occurred. So my life's cruising along. I'm having a pretty nice life. Ups and downs, adjustments. And then I turned 12. And that's where the narcotics started. So if this is my lifeline, which way do you think my life started to go from there? Very good. My life started going down, right? And then I get busted by the nuns. So it's like, oh, shit, so I'm busted, right? So things get a little bit tighter. I start to try to win over everybody's approval and favor. So which way is my life going now? I'm going up, right? So things start getting a little bit better, and I'm doing a little bit better. And then I have another life situation that hits. And 1971 hit. And in 1971, my mom died. And when my mom died, holy shit. I was already a free-range kid because my mom was so sick with cancer for years, right? So, like, my dad would get up. You want to talk about delusion, right? Delusion and addiction. My dad, I forgave my father for all his failings and shortcomings, right? I remember when I was in treatment, and it was Father's Day, so I'm less than 30 days sober, and they had me write a letter to my dad forgiving my father for his failings, right? Because I had this daddy issue, right? Like so many men do. I write, oh, you know, and I wrote about him breaking the chains of addiction and alcoholism, and my father was dead, my mother was dead, and I forgave him for everything he didn't do. Now, as the years have gone by, my dad died. I got sober in 91, and my dad died in 89. But as the years have gone by, I realized that the only thing true in that letter that I wrote to my father was, the truth pretty much ended after "Dear Dad." Everything else in the letter, I now know was bullshit. But it wasn't bullshit then. When I wrote it, it was exactly how I saw it. So I don't see things as they are. I see things as I am. So I'm living in this hostile place in my life, you know, and I'm blaming and I'm doing all that stuff. And then what's happened is that over these years of my recovery, I can stand here today and tell you I'm incredibly proud to be my father's son and that me and my dad have this great relationship today. Now what changed? My dead father or me? Right, so when my mom died, though, in 71, my dad mentally checked out. We moved, brothers, sisters, my life, the drugs, the madness, all started going, so here we go. And the next thing you know, along with that comes crime, because I don't have a job, and I like to do drugs. So, robberies, burglaries, all that shit starts. So my life hits a new bottom, I get arrested. Never been arrested. I've been like picked up by the police for little tiny things that I always let go. I get arrested 12 days after I turn 18. And I'm facing 7 felonies. That's not very good. Right? And so now I am like, I'm screwed, right? So I've hit this new bottom and it's time for me to get my shit together, right? I got to do something. So my dad hired this dad who I forgave, hires me a lawyer, who for a case of gin defends me and gives me the opportunity to go in the military instead of go to prison in California. So I get in the military, I got structure, I got goodness, my life starts heading up. I start doing great. As a soldier, I excelled because what the military gave me was structure. Structure is what the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, the lessons, that's what they give us. They give structure to the undisciplined. In the literature, it says we are undisciplined. And we ask God to discipline us in these simple ways. Well, the program of recovery gives me... Anybody who's ever bowled know, like, kiddie bowling, how they inflate the sides of the gutters, right? Well, that's really what these 12 steps have been for me. It's kind of been like a little bit of... So my life is getting better and better and better, and I'm serving my country. I'm proud as hell. I'm in the best physical condition of my life. I'm in the best mental shape I've been in years. I do not know I'm a drug addict or alcoholic, and I get introduced to a new drug called heroin. Right? So which way do you think my life's going now?
Way down.
Anybody do heroin in here besides me?
Yeah.
Right, so all of a sudden goes, woo! Bottom of my God. What the hell just happened, man? I'm in a rubber room detoxing, right? I thrown into a rubber room to detox in a military hospital in Germany. They just let you flop. And so then I cannot shoot dope. I realize that. I realize that there is absolutely no social redeeming qualities in, you know, it's like, you know, there are no clubs or people, you know, with the cocaine, snow a little bit, you know, it's cool, right? But you know, when you're drawing back that blood and sharing ribs and, you know what I mean, sharpening syringes on matchboxes, there is nothing glamorous about shooting heroin. So, my life gets here. The military, thank God, intervenes, right? Court martials me, throws me out in disgrace. That was all painful. But I know, looking back today, if that hadn't occurred, I would have died over there. And so then at that moment, I get out of service. I know heroin's bad. I'm the slow word. So I get out of service and I start going to college. And I'm doing good, right? And then I have this other great life in 1978. I meet this woman, Donna. It's like, woo, man, I liked her. She was cool, right? And so I'm idealistic, right? So we're talking about dreams. We're talking about travel, adventure. I tell her I'm going to be a millionaire by the time I'm 35. We're going to be retired. We're going to kick ass. I had all these ideals, right? And something else that I knew, like, is she started to fall for me. I started dating her in December. I got engaged to her on New Year's Eve. That's a short little courtship, right? And I married her the following August, right? And it was like there was something inside me that maybe, you know, there's guidance that occurs in us. But it was like there was something in me that knew I needed to book her into custody. You know, I got to get her ass into custody in a hurry before... I don't even know what's wrong. I have no idea, right? So we're doing good. 1978, we get married. We start fulfilling the dream. We move to Oregon. We then move to California, start my own company, find wild success. And here's the cars and the houses and the outward signs of stuff. All the while, I'm an addict without knowing I'm an addict. So then this new non-addictive drug came on the scene, called cocaine. Which way do you think my life's going now? Woo! You know, all of a sudden the company's gone. I've lost everything, right? I do not have an opinion on outside issues. I have no opinion on whether people should take meds or not take meds. I have an opinion on the quality of people's lives who come to me desperately asking me to help them with their recovery. And the reason that I bring this up is that I sponsor a lot of men. And some of the men that I sponsor have to take meds. And, or get to, I shouldn't say have to, get to take meds. Because without the meds, I got guys that I sponsor that if they don't have their meds, they will show up in a meeting dressed like, you know, I'm talking white dudes handing out CDs. And they go, yo, 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 man, I'm a Rastafari in Jesus. Then it's like, okay, there is something wrong with you. So I do not have anybody's stake, but I do have in my experience a lot of men that come to me, and they're on because they've been misdiagnosed, right? They don't know they're an alcoholic or an addict. If society would have got a hold of me when I'm peeking out the windows or slamming dope without a syringe or all my weird, twisted thinking... I suffer from disease thinking. I suffer from disease thinking today. I've been sober a long time. I'll give you an example of recent disease thinking. I'm probably 15 or 20 years sober, and I'm running up in South Mountain, and I'm a distance runner, and I'm out there, and I'm having a great time, and I'm running, and the whole time I'm running, I'm praying. It's like, you know, and I pray and I meditate when I'm running, and right by me just... this beautiful woman, incredibly beautiful, just goes right by me. She startles me, right? Because I'm out there in my zone listening to music and praying, and she's gone. And she's wearing a runner's thong. And I didn't know there was such a thing, right? It's like, I mean, her legs, I mean, I looked at her, I thought, damn. And my mind right away said, hit her in the head with a rock. What? But, I mean, you know, where does that kind of thinking come from, right? Where does that thinking come from? Now, I did not get a rock. I did, you know, I mean, I am not responsible for my thinking. I am responsible for my actions. But I have a disease that centers in my mind. Anybody in here ever have dreams? Right? Think about using or whatever. I mean, those things happen. I have no control over the subconscious. This is, so even with a lot of right living, a lot of prayer, meditation, right thinking, negative thoughts can still come in. But the difference is today I don't have to act on. So the cocaine takes my life to a new level, destroys me. And then I lose my company, I lose the Porsche, I lose it all. I'm living in the bedroom of my wife's parents' house. Now, just a month before, I got two custom homes in Texas. And now I got nothing. I mean, just that fast. Because that's what drugs and alcohol do. If there was one word I had to use to describe addiction, the word would be thief. And that thief just picked my pockets clean. So I'm down here, so no more drugs. And my wife Donna says to me, she says, honey, let's start to have a family. Let's have a family. Let's settle down and have a family. And I thought, you know, that's a great idea. I want to have a family too. She goes, we've always wanted to do one. Let's start one. And I said, that's good. She goes, well, that means we'll have to stop partying. And I said, cool, let's do that. And so Donna, my wife Donna had shot cocaine with me. I mean, she had done all sorts of drugs, morphine, but Donna's not an addict. So when sufficient reason to stop occurred for Donna, which was to have a family, Donna stopped. I had no idea. I couldn't live up to my end of the bargain. But I did the best I could. So for a while, I'm in here, you know. I'm drinking a little, you know, smoke a little weed. I don't much care for weed. And then someplace in here, I hurt my back. I don't even really know if I hurt my back. But I started taking pain pills, right? And I took a lot of pain pills. Now, I took pain pills to the extent, I hate to tell this story, but I can't not tell you. So, I'm on pain pills. I got a doctor who, like, me and him become friends. He's from India. His name was Bipin. He goes, my name is Bipin. I'm the doctor. How are you? I go, I'm good, doc. So I'm on all these pills, right? So my life, I don't know. I think, see, any pill addicts in here? Okay, so pills are one of the worst. Because pills trick you into thinking you're better than you are. Pills make me think I'm a better salesman, a better lover. I'm better at everything. Is better at pills. Yeah, until it stops going better, right? And then it all starts going to hell. So I'm on these pills. So somewhere around in here, my wife Donna says to me, she goes, you know, I don't want any more kids. I had wanted like 5 or 6. She goes, I didn't quite get it. You know, I mean, I'm heroin this, you know. Why don't you want any more kids with me? But I didn't protest because I knew that I was going to go get a vasectomy. So there's places to go get vasectomies, and literally they will numb you up. Do it, and you could go play basketball a few hours later. I mean, you know, it's like a very minor procedure. But I went to my doctor friend from India, and I said, do you do vasectomies? And he said, I did one once. Cool, well, can you do mine? I go into his office, he puts me under. I didn't know that you put people under for vasectomies. I've never met another person who has been put under for a vasectomy. But they put me under, and I got my feet up in these stirrups, very uncomfortable feeling. And I come out of the anesthesia, and the doctor is standing over me, and he has like veins and stuff pulled out. And he's got some scissors, and he's with the nurse. And I hear the doctor say to the nurse, is this the one I cut? Oh. And she says, yes. It looks just like the one you cut on the other side. And he went, ugh. It was like terrible, right? But so I went to a doc, I went to a butcher and let him hack on my nutsack so I could get a script. Remember, at the beginning it was agreed upon we'd go to any lengths for us. I would go to any lengths for the drug experience. Thank God I do the same thing for the spiritual experience, right? Well, just to wrap that story up, it didn't go so well, right? Surgery didn't go so good. Later that day, honest to God, my house caught on fire. It was Christmas time. I'm laying on my couch and there was a label on the bottle. And on the bottle it said, warning, alcohol may intensify the effect. So I take a couple of pills, I'm drinking rum and cokes. I got a fire in the fireplace and there's a knock on the door. Your house is on fire. Your house is on fire. And I'm wearing these. I can't believe I'm telling this story. But it's like a G-string. It's like a jock. It's a jock strap. It's a jock strap, right? And there's a hole in the jock strap for your thing to come through. And then it's got a pouch that you pack with ice. Right? Because the surgery was a little more traumatic than I thought. So I'm laying on my couch covered with a blanket, drinking rum and cokes and taking pain pills. And there's my house is on fire. So I jump up. I'm wearing my little thong, my little ass cap. And I go running outside. And I look up and I see that no shit. There's like balls of fire shooting out of my chimney. So I get up on the roof, and my brother hands up the hose, and here I am. This is a vision for you. I'm in my G-string. I'm up there fighting. I'm fighting the fire. I realize that this is not going to put this fire out. I got to evacuate my family. I go over, I hang drop, and I drop off the roof. They swelled up that big. Got everybody out safely from the fire. But that was just one of my stories. It was Christmas time. Story gets worse. We don't need to hear the worst, though. We don't need to hear how the story got worse. But it got worse.
So, that doesn't get a unique place on the timeline?
Should. But so, you know, now it's just part of that deal, right? I don't know that I'm addicted. I don't know what's happening, right? I don't know that my behavior is abnormal. I don't know that you don't go and let somebody hack on your stuff or a script. I don't know any of this is abnormal behavior. My poor wife, Donna, and my poor sons, right, watching this shit happen. So now I'm on pain pills. Then I start on methadone. Now I'm smoking crack. all the way through everything, I'm drinking like a fish. Which way my life going? Holy shit. Now it's dark. Now it's all about suicide. Now it's all about any way out. Now it's all about a life of failure. 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 Just everywhere. Failure. Literally, I woke up on page 8 of the big book. Quicksand spread in all directions. And there I am wanting to die. And then a man worked his 12-step on me. Right? Well, before that happened, I go to a bottom that I don't even know exists. I go to a place of hopelessness. And from that place of hopelessness, this man worked his 12-step on me. That's why I love this. That's why I devote my life to working my 12-step on others. This man put my well-being in front of his commerce. I had no idea. I had no idea recovery is possible. In spite of these stories, right? In spite of over here, shop dope, with toilet water. Over here, I shot cocaine without a needle. Just slammed the plastic barrel. I'll leave out the story of morphine suppositories. So this is it. So here I am. I still, in spite of this overwhelming evidence, I don't know, I'm a drug addict. In spite of the fact that the jewelry's all gone in the pawn shop, that I don't know what's wrong with me. My whole life people have been saying, what's wrong with you? You know, you got so much potential. So I'm stuck and I'm in this horrible place. This guy worked his 12-step on me. I began a journey of the 12 steps. Which way do you think my life's going? Yeah, and I've stayed on that journey. Which way do you think my life's going? Now, I've had difficulties. You know, I had two brothers that died before they were 40. One died at 36 of cancer. And at his wake, thought it was a good idea to snort his ashes. So dipped into the urn, chopped up my brother's ashes, and it's pretty sick. 3 years of sobriety, my brother Michael dies. He dies in my arms. I held him while the tears streamed down his face and down mine. My little brother was on the other side of him holding him. Like a river of tears down my brother's chest as he took his last breath. Dignity and honor, right? Things restored. So I mean, I've experienced difficulties. You know, I 12-stepped my nephew and I watched him die, found him dead. Found him drink himself to death. It's hideous. What an alcoholic death looks like. So I've known difficulties, right? And I've known all that stuff. But the bottom line is I've stayed true to this path. And this path leads me. Now, I have people out in front of me who live these great lives. And prayer and meditation take me. And that's a vital part because the 12 steps means all 12 of them. So that's the timeline. So back on to this thing I was talking about briefly about meds. So when I have a man come to me who has been shooting dope or drinking alcohol and destroying their life, or they've been on meth or whatever it is, I'll talk to him and we have a conversation. Man, what's happened? I want to get to know you. And then when they have a whole bunch of different meds involved or any meds involved, we do the same timeline. But then the timeline will be, okay, so you were doing good, and then in 2010, they put you on whatever it was. And which way did your life go? In a lot of cases, it goes up. Temporarily. You know, and the family's just relieved that something's happening. And then eventually, though, here's the difference. The people that I sponsored to take meds are staying sober and having wonderfully productive lives without the medication. They cannot function and do their 12 steps of work or program in rigorous honesty. But the people that come in here whacked and unable to feel the God within, you know, so we just take a look at it. Never do that independently. Always do it with their doctor. We go through the gradual withdrawal and get them to a baseline so we can then kind of take a look and go, all right, let's find out what's happening now. Let's put some steps in. So are you with me on how to do a timeline? Okay, so anybody want to volunteer to give up their story real fast so we can do another one?
Get out there, Hunter.
Yeah, Hunter. Yeah.
Y'all want me to do it?
Yeah.
Come on, bro. Come on. God.
Come on, let's see what you can do. Hey, we got to give them the Reader's Digest version because we want to keep people here forever.
All right, hey y'all, I'm Hunter, I'm a heroin addict.
Hey, Hunter.
This is my first time doing this, so bear with me. We'll see how it goes. So, let's see here. 12/31/1990. Give myself a nice little star like you did. That's when I was born. Let's see. Life was pretty good. There was some behavioral issues with me very early on, and I got prescribed to Ritalin at age, we'll say, 1995, about age 5. I stayed on Ritalin for about 2 years, and being on that stuff, my parents and the doctor that we were working with started to see a lot of negative effects. Not eating, not being able to sleep.
So your life went down.
Yeah, from 1995 to 1997, we'll say it went way down there. Not being able to sleep, not being able to eat, having facial tics, just a lot of weird stuff. And a lot of my early childhood was just kind of a blur. I don't know if that had something to do with it, but I know by the time that I got to high school, for me, The way that I experienced life on an internal level was really weird. I was afraid a lot. I was comparing myself a lot to what I saw on the outside, and it was just like I never really measured up to what I was seeing. I didn't feel comfortable. Life was very uncomfortable. And at age 15, I got introduced to marijuana, and the effects produced by pot, so we're going to say 97, so I was, what, 5, 6, 7, so 7 more years, 8 more years, so 97, 2005, we're going to say pot. We'll do a little line. And from there, it started to go downhill very fast. As soon as I started smoking weed, it was like an everyday thing. Before school, after school, I had decent grades, but all of a sudden my grades began to drop. And the reason why I liked pot so much, because it was hard for me to connect with people. You know, part of my story going back, backtrack a little bit, was being put in special education. So I was made fun of a lot and teased a lot. So I didn't, you know, it was really hard for me to feel like I could make friends. And when I found marijuana, it was like people started to laugh with me instead of laughing at me. And it was like a way, it was like a, when the Big Buck talks about this common thing that we have, like a common problem, common solution that brings us together, it was like I found something that could bring me together with people. So from 2005 to, I want to say, at least 2010, smoking weed all the time. There were some times that I got clean. There were some times that I got in trouble. Well, life was just kind of smoke weed and party. In between 2009, I got introduced to pain pills. So we'll do another line over here. By the way, comparing my story to yours, there's not much success in my story. Once I got on drugs, it's just been kind of just like a downhill thing ever since then. Like, I never had like a hot, smoking hot wife or like a great job or like all this great stuff, man. Like, once I started doing drugs, it was just like a process of going downhill, stopping, going downhill, stopping, going, you know? When I started doing Roxy's and Oxy's, when I found that stuff, it was like, that's how I wanted to feel. That was the stuff that I'd been looking for. It was like, pot was cool. I liked the effects produced. I liked like how it changed the way that I felt. That's great, but that's like not what I wanted. When I found Roxy's and Oxy's around this year, it was like, it was a wrap. That shit, like, what is, take that shit to the ground. Like, I started doing stuff like that I never thought I'd do. I started stealing jewelry out of my parents' room. I started selling everything I had. I mean, I couldn't hold a job. I couldn't, you know. And from 2009, and we're in 2018, my life had looked like treatment centers, jails, detoxes, hospitals. Eventually found it, heroin, because Roxy's and Oxy's get so expensive, you know, you gotta find a better source, you know, and I began to experience stuff out of the book, like pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I said I would never put a needle in my arm, and like when it came time to put a needle in my arm, it's like I'd never said that. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just like, I'm gonna shoot dope, you know? And it's just a downhill trickle from there until, we'll say, 2015, which is my sobriety date. We're way down here. 1-1. January 1st, 2015. I'm going to say that's my separation date because I have not shot dope or done anything else since that date. And I really don't think that has much to do with me. Because there was many times from 2005 to 2015 that I tried to get clean. There's been many times in between there that I ended up clean when I didn't want to be clean. if y'all can relate to that, then y'all know addiction. Like, it's just, that's where this thing would take a guy like me. It would force me into treatment centers, it would force me into jails, you know, and I wasn't ready to stop, and I'd get stopped, and I'd go back to it. But something happened on this date, and I haven't gone back since. And part of it, you know, I think was God had entered into my life, and I wasn't even aware of it at the time. And then another thing that happened that's going to make sense, I got hooked up with a sponsor that, like, knew the stuff out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And this guy was able to help me find my truth, as you're talking about. He was able to show me things about myself that I couldn't understand. I couldn't put into words myself. It never made sense to me. But this guy, he knew powerlessness. That's what this guy knew. He knew what it meant to, like, not be able to stop this thing on his own. And he was able to help me find my experience because he knew his. And I had a powerful, I like to call it a surrender experience in my first step, where I really realized that I'm fucked. Like, me left to my own devices, absolutely screwed. I'm going to go get high every single time, and there's not one thing I can do about it. And when I had this shift, it was really around, like, my ideas about thinking that I can control this stuff, you know? And another thing that I saw was the fact that, like, it's unconscious. Like, it's not like I really am aware of this is what I'm actually doing. It's like, my mind will create a plan about, you know, how I'm going to shoot dope and, like, how I'm going to stop on day three. Or I'm not going to shoot it, I'm going to snort it, you know, because I'll be able to stop on the third day. I won't get physical withdrawals. Those are the problem, you know, and I have this amount of money. I'm only going to spend this much. If I go past this limit, you know, then I'm going to stop, you know. And it's like, once I put the dope into my system, all those plans, they go straight out the window. Which was even weirder about that. It's like, I don't even have any awareness that that just happened. It's just like the dope went into my system and I'm on this fucking ride and I'm gone. And then 6, 7, 8, 9 months have passed by and I burn my life to the ground and I'm going back to another treatment and I'm going back to another detox. And like that crazy process repeated itself a few times in my story. And it's not like I'm walking in this time, it's like, oh shit. Last time, like, I said, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and I'm not going to do this, and all this stuff happened. It's just like, I was just, like, in this process. It was like I was just on this ride and just getting taken places, man. And thank God for that guy, because he really knew what the fuck he was talking about. That's what I couldn't, like, I needed someone that actually knew what they were talking about to help a guy like me out, because I had no idea what to do. So, from that day till now, I'd say my life has gone like this. And my handwriting kind of sucks. The power of God can take you from hell to, we'll call it heaven, man. Okay.
He and I, you know, we're different generations, different deals, but the exact same thing. What happens when that surrender, Bill called it surrender of death. So we're going to turn the page. We'll start on the next little part. This is more of sharing our truth. So this is... okay, so there's a page for you to do your own timeline. So when it's appropriate, do it. It's a great gift. Now we're going to do this one. So let me erase this real fast. Okay, so this one is this is a group exercise. Together we're going to do this. So I'm going to need who writes fast. Lindsay, you want to write?
I would, but you don't want me writing fast.
Okay.
Yeah, that might be
okay.
A little.
Who has nice and decent fast hearing?
I will write.
Thank you. I was thinking that.
It's not beautiful, but
that's perfect. Yeah. And what's your name?
Brittany.
Hi, Brittany. Come on up and help us out. Okay, Brittany. So, we're going to have you, we'll put these in red.
Okay.
So, put up here, like, what is, put just like drugs, alcohol, my way. Okay? So, what if drugs aren't right? So, we're going to take a look at that. Just use half the board because we're going to go on the other half with, this is it. This is our chance. Now, this is your experience. So, what have drugs and alcohol brought into your life? Using your way, I use porn, gambling, control, whatever it is, what has that brought into your life? Somebody give me something.
Felonies.
Okay, let's write it down. Here we go. We got felonies. What else?
False success.
False success.
False or lost?
All success, meaning I thought I was
being
successful.
Got it. Come on,
we're all here. Lost relationships.
Infidelity.
Lost relationships, infidelity.
Financial disaster.
Financial disaster. Prostitution.
Loss of soul.
Loss of self.
Soul.
Loss of soul.
Person's soul.
Anybody else in this room want to kill themselves? Give you thoughts of suicide? Suicidal thoughts? Arrest?
Broken relationships.
Broken relationships?
Violence.
Violence?
Lost respect.
Lost respect?
Dishonesty?
Bad health.
Bad health. Yeah, I got Hep C, I got all that, all those lovely little things. What else?
Car accidents.
Car accidents. Anybody in here ever make a loved one cry?
Broken hearts.
Broken hearts. Anybody in here ever overdose?
Coma.
Yeah. That's a new one. We got a coma. Coma's good. Coma's good. Hell, I even lost my train of thought. I had one before you said coma, but
overdose.
Thank you. What else? Anybody ever have a divorce? It happens to a lot of folks. Divorce.
Lost loved ones.
Yeah.
Marrying a drug dealer?
Yeah. I think that we should have.
Marrying for some reason.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Just so you know, if a drug dealer would have married me, I would have married him too. Blackout. Anybody else in here have a blackout? That's a very unnatural state. How about, can we all agree on pain?
Yes.
Sorrow?
Pardon? Incomprehensible demoralization.
Incomprehensible demoralization.
The effects on our children?
Effects on our children. You know, I'm glad you brought that one up, because I got to tell you a story about my son, right? My boys were 7 and 3 when I got sober. And so a couple of years ago, my oldest son, who's 35 now, so he was probably 31 or 2 at the time, me and him go to a meeting together. And he hears my story, and I talked in my share about that I didn't really bring the disease home, because I'm a smoker, drinker, I wasn't a violent or a loud man, you know, I provided the roof over the head and all that stuff, you know, and I would go out and smoke. And I thought that I was protecting my family. So in my share, I said, you know, at least I didn't really bring the disease home. So we're driving home that night. My son says, you know, Dad, that was a really good talk. He said, but there's one part of your story that you ought to rethink. And I said, yeah, what's that? He goes, it's the part about not bringing it home. He said, I was a second grade boy with ulcers. He said, Dad, 7-year-old boys don't get ulcers. My son did. And it wasn't because I wasn't raising hell in the household, but the amount of financial stress, relationship, worry, fear, it was like my children were raised in a pressure cooker. And I couldn't see it. That's a heck of a good story. Let's switch to a different color. What do you want? They're already there, blue as well. Whatever you like. Okay, so now let's go to this one. What has recovery? What has recovery or God's way brought to your life? Okay, so when I say God's way, remember, nobody's here to impress their view of God on you. That's what makes our program unique. That the Muslim could sponsor the Jew here. That there is no, we have one thing, that you have your own concept of God. And so when we use that, so it's brought, what is recovery brought to your life?
Freedom.
Freedom. Mm. Beautiful.
Clarity.
Grace.
Dignity.
Laughter.
Yeah, there was no laughter in my house. How many, you know what? There's a line in the book. It says, he must get laughing in his recovery. Mm-hmm.
Compassion.
Connection. Mm-hmm. How about honor?
Mm-hmm. Peace.
Peace. How about valor? Dignity.
Serenity.
I have to say
a career.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm going to write over here on this one. I'm going to add loss of jobs, right?
Yeah.
Whether it was jobs or careers.
Hell yeah.
How about ruined opportunities? Anybody ever drop out of school or pissed away like great chances?
Education.
Education. Career. What else do we have? What else has recovery brought into your life?
Awareness. Consciousness.
Exercise.
Improved health, right?
Physical.
The opposite of the destroyed health that you brought up is improved health.
Discipline.
I'm in the best health. So check this out. I run distances, right? I started running marathons at 50 years of age.
Healing.
Between 50 and 60, I ran 10 marathons.
Oh, my God.
And at 60, I started running ultra marathons, which is just as long as you. Okay, now here's the good thing. You're going to love this. So I used to go to the doctor, my doctor, and I would go there because of my knee pain. And I thought I had real knee pain. And I would go in there, and he would stick those needles in, inject cortisone in my knees and write me a couple of scripts. And back then, they weren't all connected to my computer, right? So I'd go take them to different pharmacies.
Yeah.
And I would. So these are the same knees that I used to get injections of cortisone in to deal with the pain that was produced by my mind. After I got sober, probably for the first year of my sobriety, I walked around, oh, what the fuck? What was that? I was getting shooting pains, and my mind still tries to produce pain for me.
Healing. Courage.
Did you have something you want to throw in there, Lindsay?
Oh, no, I think she got a discipline.
Yeah, discipline.
I had a truth.
Yeah, truth, absolutely.
Courage.
Courage. Yeah, I think that it takes courage to put this.
Hope.
Hope, beautiful.
Excitement.
Yeah, adventure.
Fun. Yeah.
Fun. There was no fun in the end of my youth. In the beginning, it started out fun, right? In the beginning, it was fun. And then all of a sudden, the fun went.
Respect.
Yeah, respect. How about respect of others? How about self-respect? Be able to look in the mirror.
Integrity.
Okay, so what's your first name?
Brittany.
So let's thank Brittany for by the way, now I'm going to explain something to you that this is how I take relapsers, people that have relapsed, this is how I take them through the first three steps. And I'm going to show you how it works. So we do this list just like we just did. And let me tell you why a timeline and this works really effectively with someone who's relapsed a lot. Is by now, they have read this book, and they've had the steps, and the worksheets, and the NA basic text, and the how it works and why, and they've had, you know, Big Book Awakenings, and, you know, they've had this stuff to where it's like, wah, 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 wah. So they don't know that they're doing their first step when we do their timeline. They don't know that when we make this list, that we're doing their first step. And here's then, once the list is done, then I turn around in the beginning of it, I put step one. Right, and then I write out step one. And I write out step one on there. What makes this work is it didn't come out of the book. What makes this work is it didn't come out of your sponsor's mouth. What makes this work is this is your experience. This is your experience. This is not how I take somebody who's new through the steps. When somebody's new, then we'll go straight by the text, we'll do it. But when somebody's been struggling, then we'll turn around and they write their list. And then when they're done looking at it, that's their truth. That's not mine. That didn't come out of a book. Nobody's trying to impose a step one on you. This is what you tell them. And then when they agree, and I have them read every one of them, it's like this. Okay, so when you use, you have ruined opportunities, finally falsely, and we'll read through it. As soon as they're done, I'll go step two. Came to believe a power greater than us could restore us to sanity, right? And then I have a little fun with them on step two. Came to believe a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. And then it's just real simply this. I tell them, I go, we're just going to play for a minute to work the state mental hospital. What is yours? What do you call it? The nut house here?
Peachford.
Okay. Let's just say we're at the psych ward, the nut house, whatever it is, and me and you are sitting here, and there's all the patients. And we just want to, because what it says in the 12 and 12, in step 2 at the end of it, it says that many can accept the fact that they have a problem, but cannot endure the fact that we are mentally ill. Bill talks about it, how we can claim soundness of mind, whether the destruction fell on the living room furniture or our own moral fiber. So then I turn around and I say, okay, so let's just say for a minute that we are here right now, me and you, and we're talking to all the patients in the mental hospital, and we're doing your psych evaluation. So I have my friend here. So you are my friends. You're all psych patients, by the way. You're all going to get committed. What has drinking and drugging brought to your life? And, ruined opportunity, felonies, false success, lost relationships, financial disaster, prostitution, loss of soul, suicidal thoughts, arrest, broken relationships, violence, dishonesty, bad health, kids hurt, incomprehensible demoralization, DT, sorrow, pain, blackouts, toxic relationships, married with the wrong idea, divorce, overdoses, coma, broken hearts, loved ones cry, car accidents, loss of jobs. That's a vision for no one. But that's their experience. And then in the second step to prove the insanity, here's how you prove the insanity. Clean and sober, recovery brings relationships, love, freedom, clarity, grace, dignity, laughter, fun, compassion, connection, truth, courage, health, discipline, awareness, purpose, passion, education, career, serenity, valor, peace, honor, healing, hope, excitement, adventure, respect, integrity. And when you sit with somebody who wants to do this work, you can make a hell of a list. So knowing that this is your truth, clean. And knowing this is your truth, loaded. And you choose this. Is that insane?
Yes.
You bet your ass. Get out the carpet slippers, pal. You know, get out the paper slippers, because you're going to the psych ward. And then I'll roll it straight from there into step three. And then I'll bust them right into a third step meditation. And I do a third step meditation with them. And I ask him, where do you want to go? Do you want to go to the beach or to the mountains?
Mountains, yeah.
Beach.
Okay, where do y'all want to go? The beach or the mountains?
Beach.
All right, we're going to the beach, okay? So you got to join me in this, all right? We're going to do a brief one of these third step meditations. Okay, so just you got to close your eyes. You got to go with the flow. Do your best. This is visualization. Just do your best to roll with me and where we're going. Plug in your people, your circumstances, your loved ones. So I'll take them. Now, as I've done this work with them, when they say hurt families, I then go, who? And then I get the mom's name. I get the dad's name. I get the kids' names. I get the siblings' names, right? So I've got like an intimate relationship with this person. I know their story. So we start our meditation. I let them choose. Do you want to go to the mountains or do you want to go to the beach? So we're going to the beach together as a group. So be with me. You're walking along the beach. It's the end of the day. There's a storm brewing in the sea and in the sky. You're headed towards the beach house you see in the distance with its beautiful warm light shining through the windows. You can feel the spray of the ocean and you hear the thunder of the waves. The waves are white with wild foam, and the sky is so dark and churning on top of it, and it's cold. You feel the sand blowing and stinging you a little. You turn your collar up. You walk a little faster towards that sanctuary, the lights of the beach house. You go walking closer to it. As you get there, you see the reflection of the light on the sand. You step up on the porch, shaking the cold off. You look inside. In the living room, you see a big fireplace. Warm, beautiful fire in front of it, and there's a big circular rug in front of the fireplace. And standing on that rug is every person who's ever loved you or tried to help you. Friends, old sponsors, children, loved ones. Everybody who's ever shown you kindness and love is there. And where are you? Out in the cold, separate from the place our disease always takes us. Chuck Chamberlain said, there's one problem that encompasses all problems, and that's the feeling of conscious separation from God. And there's one solution that encompasses all solutions, and that's conscious unity. So you're there, and you're cold, and you see all these people, and you finally open the door, you get the courage up, and you step in, and the door closes behind you. And everyone standing in front of that fireplace turns, and they look, and they see that it's you. They smile. Some begin to cry. You look, and you recognize their faces. Coaches, teachers, pastors, old friends who you turned away through thoughtlessness. You walk up to the edge of that rug. Step three is not some abstract idea. Step three is an admission of our need for a relationship with a higher power that can solve our problem. It is said that if you've seen the face of love, you've seen the face of God. God showed up a long time ago in my life through the loving actions of a lot of other people that I turned away. So to make a third step decision is simply to accept the truth of the love that is here right now, the love that has always been there, and the love that has surrounded me. But through my through my selfishness, through my unthinking, through my disease, through my addiction, I've always remained apart from these people. Even if I could see them, it was as though there was a glass wall between us. I now step into the middle of that rug amongst all those people. I feel their hugs, their pats on the back, the handshakes. The power of love to change a human heart. The 12 steps connect us to a power greater than ourselves, and that power is the power of love. Amen. So I don't know if any of you could go there with me, but I was there. I can see those faces. So it's a different way of taking. So if I got a brand new, if I got a guy who's brand new, obviously, take him through the conventional way. If I get a cat who's off a relapse, it's all his information. That's where the power comes from. So the power is this. Why this works is because it is your experience. And you can't argue with your own truth. And so it's just another tool to have to be helpful with others. We are done with our first session. I'll give you an exit song, but you don't have to sit for it.
Yeah, I need to wake up.